Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. Academic scholarships are automatically offered to eligible students upon admission, and all Luther students receive some form of financial aid. Luther.edu.
Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org.
We're taking a look at health in your 50s this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Some aspects of life at the half-century mark can be controlled, but the risk for some chronic health problems increases with age. And according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, heart disease and cancer are the leading causes of death for people in their 50s. So we'll learn about how to manage chronic diseases that become more challenging in this decade and what preventative steps to promote longevity. Your questions, your stories about life in your 50s, they're welcome throughout the hour. 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about your body and mind? Are you in your 40s and perhaps dreading your 50s? Are you in your 50s and feeling happier than previous decades? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Sabina Singh practices family medicine and primary care for Bellin Health in Green Bay. She's also president-elect for the Wisconsin Academy of Family Physicians. Dr. Singh, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So have you noticed in your patients any changes when they're entering their 50s, you know, compared to their 40s? Are people at this age coming in with different issues than they used to?
Well, I don't know about different than they used to, but we all age differently, and we do start to see some natural changes that just start occurring after age 50. Obviously, for women, we worry about menopause and what's happening with our periods and our hormones. And for men, starting to get worried about heart disease. For everyone, we start to worry about cancer.
And we're definitely going to get to cancer and menopause. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in treatments or medications that are affecting people in their 50s?
Biggest changes in treatments or medications is quite a broad subject, of course. We have so many breakthroughs all the time here.
Yeah.
It comes back to you know, knowing our bodies, trying to focus on eating healthy and being active. And in terms of treatments, we've sort of gone back and forth on hormones. We've gone back and forth on certain vitamins and supplements. You know, each situation is going to be very specific in terms of what kind of treatment or medicines might be helpful as we age.
And are treatments, though, for the issues people have in their 50s, is it are you feeling more optimistic as people approach this decade or are in this decade as they really look ahead and see that, you know, in the next decades, their body will see significant signs of aging?
Yes, of course. We know people are living longer. They're definitely more active. They're more vibrant and doing and staying engaged. And some of that is for treatment. We know we have moved the curve, so to speak, on heart disease because of our medications and our treatments for that. Then maybe we can delay or we can catch cancers early enough to be treated very early. So very hopeful, and also, again, a lot of things that patients can do themselves to try and keep themselves healthy.
Well, let's talk about heart disease first, because in our 20s and 30s, accidental injuries and suicide are the leading cause of death. But those causes fade around the 40s and 50s, and heart disease and cancer really rises up. Why does it become a bigger issue in our 50s, heart disease?
Possibly as we age, a couple of different things. We know we tend to gain weight, which of course causes things like high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Blood sugars start to go up as well. Those years of maybe not being so active, not eating healthy, can start to show up at that time frame. So again, we start to see more heart disease, specifically looking at you know, coronary artery disease, the blockages in the arteries.
What are some of those first signs of heart disease? What should we be watching for?
You know, whether we want to watch ahead of time and treat before it becomes the heart disease. So that's where we talk about going in, having your annual visit with your primary care physician to get your blood pressure checked, your cholesterol. You know, for heart disease itself, that's where people classically talked about angina and chest pain, shortness of breath with activity, maybe unusual sweating that they can't explain. By that time, of course, we're obviously much more concerned, and unfortunately, symptoms can be very different depending on the person and depending on the gender as well.
We're talking this hour about health in our 50s with Dr. Sabina Singh as our guide. She practices family medicine and primary care in Green Bay. What questions do you have about cancer screenings, nutrition, sexual health, or how the body changes as we age? What stories can you share about what you've learned in your 50s? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Singh, why does our blood pressure tend to rise as we get older, and what can we do to manage blood pressure?
So the arteries themselves may get stiffer as we get older. Again, the weight gain can play a role in that, too. And, again, trying to prevent high blood pressure, this may begin to sound a little bit repetitive, but it is going to be staying active, getting that cardiovascular exercise, eating healthy, getting the fruits and vegetables, getting the whole grains that we need. Those are probably the biggest things. We have looked at stress and what role can that play in some of these issues. We know we have a lot of stress in our society, and trying to figure out how to manage that can be tricky.
And what about salt intake?
Yeah, salt can certainly play a role. Not always clear how much of a role, and some people may be more sensitive than others. So we generally, when people are in the process of developing high blood pressure or look close to high blood pressure, start recommending they cut back on their salt.
What would you say about cholesterol, especially if someone has a history of high cholesterol in their family?
So we're going to start screening again, and there's recommendations of when we should screen and how we should screen. Cholesterol has become a little complicated because it's not just a number anymore. There is a whole guideline, a whole equation. So we look at your good cholesterol, if you have high blood pressure, if you smoke, and try and calculate what your risk of heart disease would be in the next 10 years. And based on that number, we may decide on treatment with a statin. People have concerns about statins, but they do prevent heart disease. They do prevent eventual death from heart disease.
So there's the good cholesterol and the bad cholesterol. The good cholesterol, you want to perhaps have a higher number?
Correct. You want that as high as possible. We know above 60, it seems to be protective from heart disease.
Well, let's look at cancer for a moment, starting with women. What types of cancers should women be watching out for in their 50s?
So we normally start mammograms at age 50 for most women, and that could be up to every 1 to 2 years on a regular basis. Women still need pap smears to be checking for cervical cancer, although the guidelines on the frequency and testing with that has changed. And then for both men and women, it's colon cancer that we start to worry about in our 50s as well.
And with women, in terms of mammograms, is there a risk with getting checked too often and finding false positives?
There certainly is a risk, and there has been some controversy about whether low-risk women should be screened at 1 year or 2 years and what age to start at. So it all, again, depends on your own risk factors, and you may need to speak with your physician to figure out when's the best timing for you. But we do want to be careful about that, too.
So it sounds like you should really look specifically at your own history and then have that conversation as you go through your family history with your physician.
Absolutely. And again, looking at other risk factors, too.
It is Health in Our 50s, what we know, what we can expect. All questions about this decade are on the table with family medicine and primary care physician Sabina Singh as our guide. Your questions, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. So what changes in your life have you made to feel better in your 50s? Are you exercising more, perhaps eating different foods, cooking more? How often do you visit the doctor to get checked for cancer or other conditions that become more common in this decade? And how do you feel about those doctor visits now? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to Dr. Singh and your questions on the table. There's a line for you right here on the Ideas Network. We're up close and personal with health in your 50s. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In your 50s, the theory is you're supposed to put all of those previous years of hard-earned healthy living knowledge into work, right? So you know about the proper screenings and the nutrition, the proper exercise and sleep. It should all be coming together in this decade as the body and mind goes through some inevitable signs of aging. And we're hitting on all the health issues for men and women with your questions front and center at 800-642-1234. Are you managing a chronic disease with your liver or your lungs? What questions do you have for a physician? What tips can you share with others in the same position? Maybe you're in your 40s and heading into your 50s with a bit of dread, trepidation. What makes you worry about this next stage of life? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. And Dr. Sabina Singh practices family medicine and primary care in Green Bay. She stays with us. Continuing here with talking about cancer, Dr. Singh, what types of cancers should men be getting screened for between age 50 and 59?
So colon cancer for everyone again, and the generally recommended test is a colonoscopy. Possibly lung cancer that is in high-risk groups with certain histories there, and that's a little more complicated because you have to qualify for that test, and something that has to be discussed, and it has to be documented that it was discussed before that can be done. And then possibly prostate cancer. That's another very individualized test to decide if you should have the PSA test and go forward with other screenings.
And how important are colonoscopies at this age?
Well, again, we know if we can get the colonoscopies done on time, we can reduce people's chance of dying from cancer. That's really the goal here. So in terms of risk or benefit, we know the benefit. So as we age, we still need to obviously continue with those further. The problem with colonoscopies, of course, is people have some dread of the actual test. And there are a few other options now. So we encourage everyone to get screened in some way, shape, or form. And hopefully that will prevent death later on.
What are some of the options now as you screen for colon cancer?
So for many years, there have been sort of fecal occult bloods, or they're also sometimes called FIT tests, which is basically a very small stool sample put on a card and sent in and checked for, is there possibly any bleeding, undetected bleeding, that needs to be followed up on and could be related to cancer. It may not be. There could be many other causes. There's now some new testing that people have seen advertised. The brand name is Cologuard. It is looking for particular types of DNA in the stool sample that, again, may be related to colon cancer. Both those tests are positive. If they show that they're abnormal, then someone does need to proceed with a colonoscopy.
And deaths from chronic health problems like liver disease or lower respiratory diseases, they become more common in the 50s. Why is that?
Well, again, and maybe our lifestyle catching up with us. People who have been smoking, people who have been drinking, potentially certain infections for the liver disease in terms of hepatitis B or hepatitis C may have been contracted when you're younger, and it takes time to develop the problems that lead to cancer.
We're exploring health in our 50s with Dr. Sabina Singh. She practices family medicine and primary care. What changes in your life have you made to feel better in your 50s? Are you exercising more or eating different foods? How often do you see your doctor to get checked for cancer or other conditions? Have you talked about screenings like ones for colon cancer? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones now with Phil joining us from Northern Wisconsin. Hi, Phil. What's your question?
Good morning. I have had asthma and allergies since I was young. And since I've gotten into my 50s, it seems like I'm getting recurring sinus infections that go into my lungs. Just wondering if that would be more common and if there's something I should be doing.
Thanks for the question. Dr. Singh, what about allergies and sinus infections in the 50s?
Well, we certainly know that at any age, you can get more infections if you have allergies. Your immune system is revved up. It's trying to fight off that allergen. And therefore, infections, including viruses and bacteria, could start to play a role and start to cause more illness. And definitely need to be discussed if potentially you need allergy treatments. Sinus treatments. There are many options to try and get things under better control so people can be more comfortable.
Phil, are you treating those allergies in any way?
Yes, I have an inhaler that I use and if I get a sinus infection, I treat them as needed. But just wondering if there's newer medications or different things I should be doing as far as the sinus issues go.
Yeah, is there anything new there on the horizon, Dr. Singh?
Well, I know for allergies, there are quite a bit of new medications, and that's something to be discussed with the specialist. Some of them are injectable, but again, there are inhalers, there's nasal sprays, there's oral medications. So definitely some options there. In terms of the sinus infections, usually if they're related to allergies and controlling the allergies will help. Not new, but an old remedy that many patients say helps them is sinus rinses that seem to control the allergens and get rid of some of the mucus and help them fight off the infections or prevent them.
And what are those rinses? How do they work?
From my understanding, they're basically a system with a bulb syringe or a pot to help flush the nose with saline. And doesn't sound very pleasant, but patients tell me it can make a huge difference for them in trying to prevent the infections.
Or a neti pot, is that what
exactly.
It's called?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. One of those neti pots, yep.
Yeah. What can you tell us about treatments for hepatitis C, a chronic liver disease?
So in terms of treatment, I'm going to have to reserve that again to the specialist too, but this is one area where we've had a great success, actually. It's now considered curable. So the good news is we have a cure for a potential disease that can cause cancer, can cause liver cancer. So we are recommending screenings in certain age groups on a regular basis, just once in a lifetime potentially, unless you're high risk, to get screened, often covered by insurance, so that we can refer you to get further testing to confirm that you have hepatitis C, and that will then dictate what type of treatment you could have.
What would qualify someone to be high risk?
So high risk, there's some concern of the blood supply at a certain age that may have been exposed. So there is an age cutoff there that I would have to double-check on. Also, we talk about things, basically blood-borne illnesses, so IV drug use, potential multiple sex partners, things that can spread throughout your bloodstream. Certain parts of the world have higher risks of hepatitis C, and so that may also contribute to whether you need to get tested or not.
And what can we do to keep our kidneys healthy? Often people have issues starting to see, you know, some kidney problems and maybe more in men.
We know that our kidney function does gradually decrease as we age for everyone, both men and women. The biggest factors in kidney function that we see are blood pressure and diabetes. Both of them can affect our kidneys. So controlling those or preventing those are going to make a big difference to keep our kidneys healthy. We talk about fluid intake and making sure we're quote-unquote flushing our kidneys. They will help regulate the balance of our fluids, and that's going to help as well.
Should we still be drinking a lot of water? What about water intake and what impact that can have as we age?
So we know for some reason that we have less thirst as we age. So we still should be drinking water. Some people have moved away from the 8 glasses a day and saying, you know, judge by the color of your urine, judge by how you feel, how thirsty you are, but we need to be a little bit careful about that. We also need to be a little bit careful with our water intake for certain people because too much fluid could be a bad thing as well. So if you have congestive heart failure, if you have kidney failure, dialysis, you have to be very careful about that.
So when you watch for fluid retention, you might be looking at, you know, at your body, at your ankles perhaps?
Correct. And that's pure gravity. So if someone who's upright, who's sitting, you might collect fluid around your ankles. Unfortunately, some folks, if they're bedridden, may notice it more in their back. But you would start to see some swelling then.
Are there issues with access to affordable health care in our 50s? Or by this time, are your patients usually coming in with some type of insurance?
You know, certainly since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, we are starting to see a lot more people with insurance, which is good for them, and able to get their preventive exams covered and preventive testing. So that is also good news. We still see folks who have issues with affording medications, with affording tests. Sometimes they may be underinsured. They may have high deductibles, and that's certainly an issue that people bring up all the time with us. But we are starting to see more people with coverage and, again, preventative exams to at least get the basic screenings to talk with your physician should be covered.
And a preventative exam, is that a yearly exam? Is that still the recommendation?
So generally, we'd like a visit once a year. It keeps the relationship going. It gives you a chance to answer any health questions and kind of review what needs to get done. Some of the tests are not yearly anymore. Many women remember having pap smears every year, and that has changed. So we tend to say stick with once a year, but depending on the condition, you may need to come for your chronic condition a little bit more frequently. Few people can go the preventive exams longer than a year, but again, we don't want to be missing anything in between. There's still immunizations to discuss. There may be new screenings that need to be discussed. Obviously, you're a little bit older, so you want to discuss what's changing there, too.
We're talking health in your 50s. We're taking stock of all the preventative steps to take now to be better positioned for this decade with a healthy mind and body. Do you feel happier in your 50s than previous decades? Why is that? What seems to be driving that? What do you wish you knew about your health before your 50s? Join in at 800-642-1234. Family medicine and primary care physician Sabina Singh stays with us. Coming up, we'll look closer at managing type 2 diabetes and how being an empty nester impacts your health, like getting reacquainted with your mate. That's after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking health at the half-century mark. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. From the colonoscopy to the reading glasses, all those reading glasses, the mammogram and the strength training, we're touching on all the key health topics in your 50s, what to expect in this decade. And now is the time to proactively address any health issues to set that foundation for the decades to come. Your questions, your insights, so welcome at 800-642-1234. So what's been on your mind about your health in this decade? What are the issues you've been wanting to bring up with your doctor? And what about that 2020 hindsight? What do you wish you knew about your health before your 50s? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Sabina Singh practices family medicine and primary care for Bellin Health in Green Bay, and she stays with us. Dr. Singh, surveys suggest that people often feel happier in their 50s than previous decades. What's going on there?
Well, I think people have maybe started to see their career starting to reach its peak, and they can see what's going to happen there. Hopefully the kids are doing well and maybe onto their own solid futures. We know our knowledge base. We know our skill set. We have a good group of friends. So a lot of positives going into our 50s that will carry us on through the rest of our life.
On our show a few weeks ago, we talked with another physician about menopause in our 40s. What is happening with menopause as we age into our 50s?
So usually menopause is complete, being a 2 to 3 year process, and then menses typically stop for most women at age 51. So we say that they're now postmenopausal. And so for women, that's when we start talking about increasing the screening test because, of course, heart disease starts to catch up to men, unfortunately, at that time. There may be the other changes in terms of vaginal dryness that may need to be addressed. Women have issues with sleep during this time that may still need to be addressed as well. Other women have figured out how to manage things. They're feeling well. They still want to continue doing all the things they normally do.
So we also start to notice more wrinkles, aging spots in our 50s. What can you tell us about our skin?
So, again, changes over time. We've talked about sun exposure and trying to watch the moles, see if anything is changing that could become precancerous. Obviously, cancer is one of the ones that we can treat very early for the skin if it can be caught. The wrinkles, unfortunately, no good answers on that. Just happens. We lose fat under the skin. Maybe gain it in other places is what my patients tell me. So we just try and deal with that however we wish.
When should we have spots checked for skin cancer? What should we be looking for there?
So for skin cancer, we talk about ABCD, the appearance, just in general, how does it look, border, the color, the diameter, meaning how if it's getting larger or not. There's no set recommendation of when or how. It's being aware of what your skin looks like, obviously protecting your skin when you're outside, and then coming in if you have a concern and getting that checked out.
What happens to our eyes in this decade? What happens with getting reading glasses, and why is our eyesight changing?
Again, the why is difficult to answer here, but definitely changing, definitely with the vision changes for reading in particular, for the way the eyes accommodate to try and read. Night vision, we may be developing cataracts. We may just have difficulty with just seeing things more clearly at that time, too. So, again, referred back to the eye doctor who can help a lot with helping with these problems.
We're talking this hour about health in our 50s. Dr. Sabina Singh is our guide, and she practices family medicine and primary care. What questions do you have about cancer screenings, about your nutrition, sexual health, or how the body is changing as we age? What stories can you share? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Singh, let's take a closer look at diabetes, and its more common cause of death in the 50s, particularly among racial and ethnic minority groups. What can people do to manage their diabetes at this age?
So we get back to eating right and exercising and hopefully not gaining the weight that contributes to diabetes. There is a lot of management. It's a lot of self-management to control it in terms of checking sugars, keeping track of what you eat, keeping track of the activities. We certainly have a lot of medications, and there's new ones coming out every day, unfortunately, because we have an epidemic of diabetes. So lots of opportunity to work on it. People are now trying to work on pre-diabetes, categorizing it maybe not as a disease but as a condition that we can offer some treatment and some hope, whether that's, again, focusing on the nutrition and the exercise.
Explain for us the difference there between type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
So type 2 we generally think of as older. People still have insulin. The insulin is still present and helps, but it's not working right. You're starting to see the sugars trend up, but there's still insulin present, and that allows us to use certain medications to treat it because we can use the body's insulin or make them more insulin sensitive. Type 1 we generally think of as younger patients, maybe children even, and for whatever reason, possibly autoimmune, possibly another illness, they don't make any insulin. And the danger there is that the sugars can get quite high, dangerously high, and may need to be hospitalized to get that under control initially.
What about diabetic pumps, the pumps that some people wear for their insulin? How have those evolved?
So, again, much as technology has evolved, that has evolved quite a bit, too. The advantage of the pumps is could it be recreating the way our pancreas functions? So the goal would be that you would have a baseline insulin, and you could add extra insulin as needed depending on your dietary intake, or maybe adjust if you're going to be active. A lot of them have gotten a lot smaller. People remember the sizes of pagers, probably smaller than a phone. Some of them, I believe, can actually interact with your phone, and that information could be relayed to your physician. Other new exciting thing, not just with the pump, is actually with sensors. They now have sensors that can be taped onto the arm and get blood sugar readings, and as opposed to pricking the fingers. So some people have started to use that to try and get multiple readings, and they can read throughout the day multiple times, see what's going on with their sugars, and then make adjustments.
It seems to be that there are a lot of insulin products on the market and different manufacturers providing that insulin. What about the cost of insulin, and is there a generic?
So there is a generic that's been around for a while. It doesn't work as well. We have more concerns with the generic in terms of ups and downs, highs and lows. So the brand names are out there. They are expensive, and there's different ones. Generally in two categories, long-acting insulin, again, to try and cover that baseline insulin that we may need all the time, and then shorter-acting ones, anywhere from 15 minutes to 30 minutes to an hour related to eating. And the dosage may be adjusted depending on how much you eat. So you would have to keep track of your carbohydrates, kind of estimate what you need to take in at that time. So those are primarily the two different types of insulins.
And it seems like it would be very individualized for each person as to what type of insulin would work best for their situation?
Correct. Gradually in the type 2 diabetic, maybe adding insulin. You may have tried other things first, including a lot of other oral medications, and maybe start with a long-acting. Generally speaking, they work the same way, so we may not necessarily prefer one over another. And then if somehow that isn't working or it's become more difficult to manage the sugars, add the short acting in to help cover the meals too.
We had a segment not too long ago about the difficulties of covering the cost of insulin and some people going to the extent of having to ration their insulin. Why is that a bad idea?
Well, again, you're not going to get the blood sugar control. And without the control, in the short term, you can get quite ill. If the sugars get too high, people can, unfortunately, get the most scary situation is a coma. If the sugar gets too low, you can also pass out with that. So you won't get the, you could have an immediate effect. You're more susceptible to illnesses and infections. And then the long-term effects of the heart disease and eye problems, nerve damage, kidney damage, that will start to build up as well. So unfortunately, it's understandable how it happens, but it's a very unfortunate situation.
Dr. Singh, let's move on to our bones and muscles. What do our bones and muscles look like at this age?
So we're starting to lose both muscle mass and lose some bone mass. And again, for women, it really picks up after menopause. For men, it may be a little bit more gradual. So again, when we talk about losing bone mass, we're talking about osteoporosis potentially as we age. Maybe not until our 60s, but the bone loss is starting in our 50s. And losing muscle strength with that may also, our metabolism may slow down. And again, that can affect both men and women.
What does the testing look like for osteoporosis?
So the testing itself is, the screening test is recommended for at age 65 for everyone. If you're between 50 and 64 and have certain risk factors, it's usually a bone density test where they scan your hip and your spine and give us an idea of its thickness. So is it developing loss that we can see, generally compared to a 30-year-old woman? That's sort of our standard of when our bones are strongest.
How can you counter that bone loss? Are there any strength training exercises you should do perhaps on a daily basis?
So in general, we don't recommend strength training every single day because you do need some recovery time. But we do want some strength training and basically all the different muscle groups, which is quite a lot, but that's we have bones everywhere. We need to get them worked. We look at weight-bearing exercise, again, trying to work on the hip and the spine and those bones there. Getting an adequate calcium and vitamin D, and then, of course, understanding your risk. Smoking, caffeine, and alcohol all play a role in bone loss as well.
Really? Wow. So nutrition really factors in.
Yes. Yes, most definitely.
Talking with Dr. Sabina Singh, practicing family medicine and primary care for Bellin Health in Green Bay. She's taking us through the thick and thin of health in our 50s. Your questions, your stories, they're welcome throughout the hour. We're at 800-642-1234. Are you an empty nester? Have the children left for college or new jobs? How are you and your partner getting along? Are you struggling with this new lifestyle, or are there upsides? Do you feel happier in your 50s than previous decades? Why is that? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. Time passes, our bodies change. We're working through health in our 50s here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For many people, the years between age 50 and 59 bring on a number of changes, successes, achievements, perhaps health challenges. We're looking at health and wellness during this decade with your questions, your stories, inspiring the conversation at 800-642-1234. Still time for what's on your mind. What do you want to know about your health in this decade? When you entered your 50s, what changes in your health did you notice? Did you feel more aches and pains? Did you feel less energy in the morning? What changes have caught you by surprise? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Sabina Singh is our guide through the hour. She practices family medicine and primary care in Green Bay. So, Dr. Singh, let's take a look at mental health. Parents around their 50s can perhaps become empty nesters if they had their kids in their 30s or so earlier. Kids have left for college, careers, maybe something else. How can that affect our health?
And while a lot of times we have good stress and we're happy about these situations, sometimes it can be interpreted from our body as a loss. And so, of course, we start to screen for depression on a regular basis, most all age groups now, but we might see more as we age for these reasons. We still have lots of ways to treat it. It's definitely not a hopeless situation, but starting to get more worried about, again, how we think and feel.
What is that screening like for depression? What are some signs that you look for in those preventative care visits, those physicals?
So there actually are standard screening questions now at that time. And regarding how are you feeling in the last 2 weeks, are you actually down or depressed? We may talk about appetite being increased or decreased, fatigue, motivation, feeling anxious or nervous, feeling overwhelmed. So there's actually a series of questions. It can actually be scored out and sort of give a grade, a level of depression, and that can help guide a discussion about what are possible options to treat. Do you need counseling? What else can we do to help you?
Yeah, I mean, how often do you see, too, in the 50s where there's new stresses on marriage?
You know, we see it at all ages. Again, people may be going through other changes that may trigger, one thing may lead to another in terms of if the kids are leaving and maybe the marriage wasn't quite so happy to begin with, or both partners are going through some physical changes, some health changes. We know having chronic illness can increase the risk of depression, so that can all tie in together.
Is the midlife crisis still a thing, or is that not a real thing?
It's not something we really discuss anymore.
Okay.
I don't know why, just people don't put it in that way. Or we have a better understanding of the things are going to change over time, and we have to adapt and have to deal with it.
Well, kids are out of the house. Let's talk about sexual health. Can people in their 50s expect better sex during their child-raising years?
You know, for some couples, that's true. They feel that they don't have to worry about kids in the house. They don't have to worry about the possibility of pregnancy. Maybe in a stable relationship and don't have to worry about sexually transmitted diseases. So that can certainly add to feeling like you're having better sex at that age group. Certainly what we tend to see in the office, a little bit more concern about maybe lack of interest or physical changes that could be impeding that. But many couples up until 70s or 80s could still be having sex.
Yeah, what about lack of interest and some of those physical changes? What do you mean there?
So for women, again, we talk about maybe vaginal dryness, so it could actually be uncomfortable and you lose the elasticity. Sometimes it's harder to get aroused. Same for men. We start to see signs of erectile dysfunction. Again, some of the physical chronic illnesses could be playing a role. Sex is also mental. So if people have issues with depression, alcohol, other conditions could be playing a role in that too.
What is happening hormonally?
So again, women have gone through menopause usually by 51, not everyone, and that can certainly play a role in interest as well as sex drive and wanting to have sex. Again, men a little bit more gradual with the testosterone decreasing.
The FDA just recently approved the first female Viagra drug. Does that help in any way? What do we know about this drug?
So I'm sorry to say I do not know very much about this drug yet, given how it's been just approved.
Okay.
So we'll have to take a look at that further. We always exercise caution with any new medication, and in terms of sometimes when things are out in the market, we start to see other problems or concerns with it. No reason to think that there is one right now, but I know a lot of patients will be very excited to hear about this.
Are there similar types of drugs like this first, Viagra drug, or is this a long time in coming?
This is actually a long time in coming. People have talked about supplements. We certainly get asked what is there that's similar for women. Besides just we have ways to treat some of the physical symptoms, but to actually treat the sex drive or the interest is more difficult. So this is a long time in coming, and it's very exciting news. We'll just have to see how it works out now.
So let's take a look at exercise. How much exercise should people in their 50s be doing every day, every week?
So in general, we talk about 150 minutes a week. Some recommendations are 30 minutes a day. I often with my patients say, just get moving, just get started. We're hoping that if you can get a little bit of movement going, that that's going to lead to a little bit more and a little bit more, and it will start to add up.
Hmm. What are some, are there any suggestions for types of exercise that you would recommend to your patients?
So anyone who hasn't been exercising, we're going to say start slow. Find something you enjoy. We want you to stick with it. We don't want it to become a chore. Potentially find a buddy. We know that if we commit to doing something with someone else, we're more likely to stick with it too. So we like the cardiovascular exercise. We know we're trying to prevent the heart disease. But as simple as walking, some people prefer dancing. I have someone I know who puts on her music at night, and when she does all her house cleaning, she kind of dances her way around the house.
Whatever works, whatever
gets you going.
How is our metabolism changing in this decade?
So metabolism starts to slow down. We start to lose muscle mass. Unfortunately, we start to gain some fat, especially belly fat. And that is why we start to see the weight gain as we get older.
And how could changing our diet help with energy? Are there any suggestions there?
So back to the fruits and vegetables, avoiding the processed foods, things that, we are meant to be eating whole foods, natural foods, so to speak. Those are the things that we need to feel better to prevent disease, limiting some of our fatty foods, maybe our meat products as well.
And so when you're talking with a patient about diet and exercise, are patients more interested in going on a particular diet, or are they looking holistically at their lifestyle and figuring out how to change it in order to perhaps lose weight?
You know, I've seen both. We seem to be on a trend with the keto diet at the moment, so I'm getting a lot of questions about that, which is high protein. It can also be quite high fat. Most patients tell me it's very filling. So I have seen patients trying that. We have to be cautious because of other medical conditions and watching the blood sugars and how people feel with that. Of course, we'd be concerned in the long run about cholesterol and blood pressure, but that seems to be very popular right now.
What about the importance of sleep as we age? How do we deal with sleep?
So how we deal with it, unfortunately, is we don't have a great answer. We certainly recommend sleep hygiene is what we call it, because we know that sleep can affect our way of thinking. It can affect our mood. It may even affect our chronic illnesses. We start to see some folks with sleep apnea. So we talk about sleep hygiene in terms of getting set schedule, in terms of going to bed and waking up, keeping the bedroom quiet and cool, shutting down the electronics, getting some exercise earlier in the day. All of those things can help our sleep.
So as we wrap up here, is it ever too late to get healthy, to start making changes?
What would
you tell us?
I would tell everyone that please start. Feel free to start making whatever small change is easy for you. I have seen great, great success over time. I have seen people become, I guess we could say, cure their diabetes, bring down their blood pressure, help their cholesterol. Obviously, quitting smoking can have benefits very quickly in terms of your heart disease within a few years, feeling better. So I would encourage everyone to continue to work with their physician and find opportunities to help improve their health.
Dr. Singh, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Dr. Sabina Singh practices family medicine and primary care for Bellin Health in Green Bay. By the way, if you missed our 40s decade, you can find the link to it at WPR.org over on the Morning Show page. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.